Lacey.
And I'm Lauren.
And welcome to another episode of the Llamas Podcast.
And today, as promised, we are going to talk about Micah Miller and the Netflix series and kind of some other stuff. But first, so as everybody knows, Friday afternoon, we got a mistrial with Lindsey Clancy. They're having a hearing on September 29th. I don't know what motion that's under, but that's kind of the next thing coming with that. So in South Carolina, can we do what Reddington did? At the end of the trial, Reddington asked one Supreme Court justice for Massachusetts to pretty much come in and I didn't even understand all of that. So do we have anything like that in South Carolina?
I don't know. I'm confused by what he was doing as well, so I'm going to say no. But essentially, he was asking to replace the one juror. So that was his motion, was to replace the one juror who was not following the law. And so what I think was happening was he was petitioning the Court of Appeals to step in and make a ruling on that issue, because if they ruled that it should be that juror should be dismissed and just put an alternate, I'm assuming they could go ahead, but I don't know how that works with jurisdiction. So here, certain courts have jurisdiction over a case, and it doesn't go to another court until that jurisdiction ends. So, you know, for example, when we're in circuit court general sessions, they have the power to rule on everything at every single point in the case until the case
are certain things that are appealable immediately. So I don't know, like, I know we've looked before on like trying to get another attorney disqualified because there's a conflict or something like that. Sure. That is immediately appealable. So I don't know. I guess the issue was that, I guess in their jurisdiction, that must have been something immediate, but I've never seen one Supreme Court justice be the one that just, like, you just call around and get one. So it was different, but I don't think any Supreme Court justice wanted to come in on that one.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. And I think it was trying to force a verdict. And we don't want that. We don't want that either way, because I definitely don't want it on the defense side as well. Because usually I will say when verdicts are forced, it's usually a conviction. I will be honest, I'm extremely surprised that the numbers were 11-1. That's not guilty. I thought they would be more split for sure. But this person definitely, you know, held out for however long. And I mean, a lot of jurors don't follow the law as given to them. They're bringing in personal feelings and stuff, and everybody judges credibility, I think, differently as well. And so it just is.
And we don't know what was said in that jury room, because the judge went and individually questioned all the witnesses, told them what the law was, how they were supposed to interpret it. And we're going just, I guess, so I've seen a case, and I don't know, like, if this happens here or if you think there's any merit to it. I saw where there's been, like, people saying that he could possibly get disbarred or get sanctions for what he did by calling out that one single juror.
I don't know about that. I haven't heard that part.
So pretty much at the end, he called out that juror, and there was all this, like, that jury was sealed, like, where people weren't supposed to know who was on the jury, like, with Murdaugh, so that way they're not harassed and that type stuff. And afterward, he called out, at the end of it, he blamed that one juror for not holding up justice and that type stuff, that there could possibly be sanctions for him for that.
I don't like it, I'll be honest there, but I also didn't like where he told the judge he needed to give the instruction with force or something like that. And the judge was like, I literally read exactly what you wanted me to read. Like, how do you want me to read it? I don't get what you're trying to say. But he was saying he didn't give it enough, like, strict instructions, I guess, with a different tone or something. But I thought that was a little too far as well with the judge. I get you have to preserve things for appeal and make certain motions on the record to preserve those. I understand that. And sometimes you get into it with judge, but you have to preserve the record. But that was not preserving the record. I was kind of disappointed in his behavior with that. Just like I don't like that he's asked Trump to pardon her. We both know that he can't. Like, there's nothing to pardon her from. She hasn't been convicted of anything. And again, you mentioned this before we jump on the podcast. This is a state crime, not federal. So he wouldn't even have the power to pardon somebody on the state level either. So it's just like completely improper. A few things that he has done as the trial ended.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. There were things I didn't like. I mean, I will say the prosecution, I hate talking about them, but they were awful. Like, there's nothing else to say. And I get their boss sticking up for him because at the end of it, he talked about they did a great job and stuff. What else is he going to say? He's their boss. Like,
Right.
and they may have done the best they could. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't like talking awful about them. But I don't like a lot of things both sides did in this case. And I think people got way too into, oh, Reddington is like this awesome attorney. A lot of things he did were bullying. And I don't like that in a courtroom, but I'm not into dramatics. Like, give me the facts, give me the evidence. Because at the end of the day, whether you make a scene or not, the facts are the facts. And I just felt he was too dramatic. But to each their own.
I know you hate talking about prosecutors because of the prosecutor with the OJ case, but I do think you're pointing out something important. They were hating on her for things she wore, things like that. And yes, no, we don't like the bows, but they literally are using the bows as a prop. You're complaining about the props they used, how they conducted their job. I think we can, that's a difference with, and I can't think of her name right now from the OJ case,
Marsha
but
Clark.
they were just criticizing her for being a woman on this case. You're not doing that with these prosecutors.
Well, it wasn't her being a woman, it was how she looked. They talked about her hair. I mean, and it's stuff. That's another thing too. Like, some of the things that
Vanity
annoyed,
stuff.
well, the things that annoyed me too, though, some of it was not just the, they said a lot. And I say a lot, but I'm not a, I don't go to court a lot. Like, that's not my job. And so I guess like that like drove me insane and be like, and I feel like that was a tick. And I feel like when you get to this level, you shouldn't have that tick. And that's being judgmental. But it annoyed me.
But if like whenever if I get into some or I move, my biggest thing is I move around too much, my law partner will pull me aside and just remind me that that is what I do and to dial it back and to work on it. And that's okay. I can take that constructive criticism and I think we're allowed to give it, especially when you're trying a case of this magnitude on TV. We're not sitting there criticizing their wardrobe, whatever they wear is fine. Like I don't care if your heels are flats. Like I think that's what the difference is between the OJ case and this one.
And I
I
will say, I
think
thought the
they were
prosecution did a
trying.
horrible job in Murdaugh, and it was men. Like,
Agreed.
they were horrible. And I feel like in this case, I sometimes feel like, I don't know, maybe they just, because of public perception in both cases, thought they had the case won before going in and maybe didn't put the effort into it. But we got to see now. I guess we won't know anything till after this September 29th here. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's. I don't know. I didn't look up to see what, but it's some type of motion he's filed. But then we'll have to see, are they going to retry the case? What are they going to do? And since the jury was 11-1, but they weren't saying she weren't, they weren't doing a not guilty. It was not guilty by reason of insanity. So they were wanting her to go to a mental institution. So it wasn't a complete not guilty. So we'll have to see what the prosecution decides to do.
And my concern is finding a jury that hasn't heard about this case. President Trump was asked about the case and if he'd been following it, and he gave not I don't want to say a too detailed answer, but like he definitely had been following parts of it. He knew what the core issues were. And he kind of gave just like a brief kind of just synopsis. He didn't give an opinion on it, which I think is the right thing to do in this case, but he clearly indicated he knew about the matter and everything, what they were all arguing, and said, we'll just kind of see what happens. So the fact that the president was so aware of the trial situation, it would be wild to me that they could find 12 jurors that hadn't heard of this case at all. especially with how much social media has blown up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the same thing we're going to face here in South Carolina with Myrtle. Like, it's hard once a case gets out there on the news. I mean, I'll be honest, though, my paralegal, she could be a juror in either case because she literally does not watch anything local, doesn't care. She's all into, like, political stuff, nothing like this. So there are people out there. It's just how many and how easy are they going to be to find?
So, moving on to our topic, and I have to say, Sean was very disappointed when we brought it up last week and didn't keep going because he is so invested in this documentary and in this case. So, switching gears to Micah Miller, which is another thing that has, I think it kind of blew up on social media when it happened, and now with the release of the documentary, it's blown up even more. Go watch the documentary. We're not going to go over a ton of the facts here today, but so let's just jump in to some of the questions.
My question, okay, the attorney. So, can you do you think she ethically could talk about what she talked about? Like, so I guess here's the thing. So, for us as attorneys, we do have attorney-client privilege. That privilege survives death. So, like, just because your client dies. Now, there are exceptions, obviously, to the privilege. If I had a client come in and say, I'm going to go blow up Bob, I bought a gun. Okay, yes, obviously, you know, we can do that. And then, and there's also the issue where I've dealt with it more would be in the will contest area. The attorney can defend themselves in will contest and say, this is what the client told me, I did that. Are in ethical violations, like if you sued somebody for violating ethics, obviously at that point the attorney can discuss everything. But other than that, it's very limited where we can talk, or if the client gives, you know, like a waiver to talk about it.
Right. And here I will say, I think a lot of the things that she was talking about were documented. So she did talk about the stalking, that what he was doing to her, and that was documented in police reports. So I definitely think she was within the ethics rules to discuss anything that could be received publicly. So police records are public information. You can request them. Anybody can. If you want to go down to City of Myrtle Beach, you can go right now and ask for all incident reports related to Micah Miller.
And she was not representing her on any of that. She was simply representing her in the scope of a divorce. So I think that matters too, what her scope was.
And there was a filing of a restraining order. So I do think a lot of the information that Regina was giving was public, in that it was a court request for a restraining order. And she had to put a lot of the information Micah gave her in that. So I think most of the stuff she said relating to in the documentary, she could probably find where it is in the public with the restraining order petition and the police reports. So I think she is okay in what she said about the case.
Also, she owes him no duty. So, like, if he came to her and said anything, she has no duty to him whatsoever. I mean, this wasn't like mediation where you are confidential. He was just coming to her after the fact, that type stuff. So she owed no duty to him.
Now, what hangs me up is the ethical question of recording the phone call with him, if she did so without his permission. So in South Carolina, we are a one-party state, which means that as long as you are a part of a conversation, you can record it without the other person's knowledge. So if I went to Lauren as friends and I said, Lauren, let's gossip, and I recorded that conversation, I am within my legal right, even if I don't tell Lauren that. Now, if Lauren's having a conversation with her paralegal and I slide in a tape recorder and I'm not a part of that conversation, that is what is illegal here in South Carolina. So that is what I mean by a one-party state. However, ethics rules for attorneys are different. If my client calls me, even if I'm not publishing the recording, let's say I'm trying to do it because I'm on the road and AI can record my notes with my software system, which it can. It can upload my notes from that conversation with my client. I cannot do that without my client's permission. That's what my ethic rules say. So even though I'm legally allowed to record that conversation without my client's knowledge, I'm not ethically allowed to record that conversation without my client's knowledge.
But he was not a client.
But I'm under the impression the ethics board doesn't want us recording any conversations without permission.
But I do wonder, you know, like sometimes, like, you know, when you call somebody, I wonder if like her front desk was like, or had that little, you know, when you call like your credit card company to pay your bill, they're like, oh, calls will be monitored, da 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 da. So I wonder if she had some like something like that giving them notice. I don't know. I felt like overall she seemed like a good attorney, and she seems like a nice, like she knew the law. She was doing what she could to advocate for her client. And I mean, I don't think there's anything she could have done differently in any of this to change anything.
I don't either. I think she kind of went above her requirement too. She was just passionate about Micah after she died, and I applaud her for that. That's what I strive to be too, because after Micah, died by suicide is what the ruling was. I know some people don't think it was. We'll get to that in a second. But after she died, you know, she knew that J.P. Miller was super sketch. And so his sermons online, she went and downloaded every single sermon she could online, and then she turned over everything to the FBI. And I think that's extremely smart, because as they started looking into more of the cyberstalking and all and the harassment and everything, I think those clips from the sermon for the documentary were really important, and he could have just gone and deleted all of it. So, you know, before he even had a chance, she made sure to download, I think she said over 500 sermons. And then when the FBI requested her file, she gave it over, and she had copies of those sermons. And I don't even know if they're still online now, but she saved them all. So they will always be there for whatever they need for their investigation into J.P. Miller. So she didn't have to do that. Like, no. She just wanted to make sure she got everything to go after this guy.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that she did go above and beyond in that. Now, speaking of his sermons, so I go to a cooperative Baptist church. So it is not Southern Baptist. We are cooperative Baptist. We are a more open-minded group of people. I have a woman pastor, so obviously we are very much women are equals. Would you have been able to sit through those sermons talking about if you don't have sex with your husband, like, when he wants it, that's a sin? Like, could you have sat through that?
So no, and I know for a fact I could not have. Now, I will say, as a kid / youth, I was raised Southern Baptist. I was ultra conservative, very extreme. And I think I sat through probably a lot of things that I wouldn't sit through today. So I think as an undeveloped mind and brain, yes, sure. I was told something was right and wrong at church. I wholeheartedly believed it. It was not until I got older I would ask questions about things. We did have a pastor one time that, you know, women were not supposed to be preachers and stuff. And, you know, I was just like, well, I guess just go with the flow, like, whatever. I would not stand up for that today. And I can tell you that because in college or law school, I went back to my home church and I took my nieces. And they were, whoever was on the pulpit said that having sex with someone of the same sex is the same thing as having sex with an animal under God's eyes, that it was the equivalent. And I was like, absolutely not. I looked at my nieces. I said, y'all want to go play in the nursery? And they said, yeah. And I said, let's go. And it was a guest pastor that day. And so we got up and left. I do not share that belief at all. They also have an uncle who was gay, so I was not going to expose them to that. And we got up and left. And so I can tell you, as a fully functioning adult whose brain has developed, no. But if I'm being honest, as a kid, I probably would have.
I probably would not have listened to it even as a kid, because I have very always been, my body is my body and nobody is going to tell me what to do or not do with it. And as much as my mother tries to, like, my mother's a feminist, she doesn't always act like it, but she is. And I think if somebody told her it was a sin, that my dad wanted to do that and she didn't want to, it was a sin and she was going to hell, I'm pretty sure she would have said, that's ridiculous. So for me, I don't think I ever could have sat through that. I also don't think, like, he definitely was putting the blame on women for men cheating. And then he go back and say, no, it's their own fault. But you're saying, oh, if you don't do this. And the fact, I'm not going to say in church you don't have sermons about sex and marriage and all that stuff. You do sometimes. And I know we were seeing in the documentary little clippets. But dear Lord, I think the man talked about sex way, way, way too much. Like, there is so many other things in the Bible we can talk about. And I know we're talking over years and years, but it seemed that was one of his, he talked about at least maybe once a month. And I really don't think we need to have that many sermons on that, no matter what.
I agree. And that's why, like, when that sermon happened, I referred back to with my nieces. That was a guest pastor, and the pastor that we had before that was not, he would not talk about something like that. Like, he wouldn't. That was not a topic that needed to be talked about in a sermon. And he would go off other messages and things that were important. But I agree. I mean, yeah, they are snippets, so we won't know how much it was. But I'll also say this, looking at the congregation, I think it was mostly adults sitting through it. And it bothers me. Like, they knew about the affairs. I feel like all of that was there. And what, like, that the one lady that came forward, she thought it was like a one-time thing. She was willing to help him out, but then she realized it was a pattern. So she decided to go to the elders because she didn't think he was fit to run the church if he was continuously committing adultery. And even the elders dismissed her. Even when she took her concerns, the elders of the church dismissed her and wouldn't go against him and pull him as a leader of the church, even though he kept having affairs.
I mean, yeah, he didn't stop. Like, he cheated. He had a child before he married his first wife. And that, I don't know if that was in the documentary, but I've seen it on other podcasts and stuff. So he had a child, then he got married, had those kids, and then cheated on her and got with Micah. And now he's with this woman whose husband accidentally drowned in a apartment pool that had a gate around it. Now, if we're going to look into sketchy stuff, I would like to go back and look into that more. But I will say there's a lot of... There is a lot. So I saw this other podcast and I can't remember the name of it, or I would tell you to watch it, but pretty much they did a lot of money laundering, not laundering. I don't know what they were just using the church as a front. And so, like, the church would buy a plane and then this plane suddenly went into their personal business. They also, did you know they own the Dueling Piano Bar down at Broadway at the beach?
I thought it was the Crocodile something. Is that what
it's the Crocodile, but I think it's that Dueling Piano Bar.
I did it all over the weekend. And so heads up, don't go to that place if you don't want to support JP Miller. So going back, I have to ask, because I think we're on the same page with this. I do not think that man had an accident in the pool. I think somebody pushed him.
Oh yeah, like, I'll be honest with you, I think Micah probably did kill herself. Like, do I think she should? Do I think JP had some responsibility? Possibly. I don't know. It wasn't like that case where that girl sat in the car with the guy and told him, do it, do it, do it. You know, it wasn't like that situation. Does he have some? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about getting into those laws about, because you made me feel some way. Now, I do think he was a domestic abuser. I think he deserves to be in jail because I do think he abused her. I think he raped her. You can say what you want to say about being a married couple, but your body's still your body. He raped her. He put her on testosterone to make her have a drive. No, he raped her. So I don't think he actually physically killed her, but did he do a lot of things that abused her? 100%. But that other one, that is an apartment pool that was gated. How did that man get in there without somebody? And, like, he wouldn't have just been free rolling and going to the pool. He'd been in a wheelchair for a long time.
So sketchy. And the fact that the wife called JP and Micah for any of his family. So they were there. Like, can we dig into those text messages? Get the text messages from JP and Susie when all that happened. I want to see some stuff.
Well, and they knew they were having an affair. Like Micah knew about that affair.
Yeah.
I just,
Well, did she know about it at the time that man died?
I think so. Like, I got a little confused on the timeline with everything,
She
but
was
I know
told
she,
quickly.
but she probably was told by JP, you better comfort her. This is one of our people. You know, like, she was so manipulated. And it just makes me sad because it seemed like she was so full of life and, like, she so wanted to, like, share the word of God in a true, real sense. And he took all that away from her.
What I do believe she died by suicide. Let me just put that out there. But I can understand some of the questions around it, right? Why did she make a sandwich if she was going to go and kill herself? Why did she make a sandwich for lunch? Why did she change into her work clothes before going to buy the gun to go and do it? Why did she fill her tank up with gas? Those are interesting questions. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I feel like she was doing stuff to make every she told her old lady roommate, you know, like, hey, I'm gonna go to work. I think she didn't want to alert anybody. So obviously she put her work clothes on, but she was gonna go to work. She wanted it to make look normal. And I will say in that video where she was kind of smiling when she went to buy the gun, I think that could be, you know, like a lot of times people who are going to commit suicide, when they finally have the plan and know what they're doing, they do get relief. And I think that might have been her relief. Just look normal so I can go do this. Because, and I don't think she did it because she truly wanted to kill herself. I think she did it to save her family because all of the stress and everything everybody was under.
Stuff too. Terrible case. He's a terrible person. I did see where I guess they tracked down his church because y'all, he is still preaching. I don't know who
The
works at his
people are
church.
still following him.
I cannot. But they did find where he is. I saw somebody like outside on their TikTok. I don't know where it was in Myrtle Beach. I think it was somewhere near Market Commons, is my guess. But from what Mindy said, which is my peer really go out the beach, that they still protest his church pretty regularly and protest him, which good for you all going out and doing that. Solid work. But yeah, so that's kind of where we left off. He is currently on bond for federal charges of cyber stalking Micah. He did post her new. That's another thing. While he was still the preacher at this church, and this church is winning like best church of the year, he posted her nude photos on the internet. How can you go listen to a preacher who has posted nude photos of his wife?
I mean, I can't listen to a preacher that says you got to give it up 4 times a day, but
My gosh.
he
Terrible.
seems to be at Sex Addicts Anonymous, if nothing else. I
Or it
mean,
was
he
more than likely
obviously is
addiction.
addicted.
You are.
But, and I feel like this is the thing, like, I don't want people to see this and think a lot of churches are like this because they're not. Like, there are a lot, like, my church is an amazing place. I have a woman preacher. I love her. Like, she is amazing. I have a group of supportive people at my church. We are very open-minded. My church is a lot of older people, and I love it because they're there for you and they've been there and they'll help you. And I just want people to realize that's not what all places are. You can find places
Yeah.
where you feel fitting in. And just because we're in the South, I feel like everything bad happens down here. Especially South Carolina. I mean, we got this documentary, we got Murdaugh still going on, Susan Smith. Like, we've had a lot of bad things here in the South, but all of our churches are not bad.
My church, there's a lot of issues going on about like this one, and that's come some of my trauma with the church, so just want to open that out for any of our listeners that are kind of sharing my perception with the church. Not all churches are like that. I do agree with Lauren on that, but honestly, with some of the sermons growing up and things that were said in my church, and kind of relating a little too much to the documentary and the sermons and things, and some inappropriate comments and things that were made, I believe there's probably more churches operating like that that shouldn't be too.
I agree. And I think that's where people have to stand up and leave those churches and go to ones where,
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, like, they were not a Southern Baptist church, even. They were some, like, non-denominational, like, something. I don't know. And I think it just, you have to, if you're a religious person and you want to be, don't let this scare you off with things. There are plenty of good places, there are plenty of places that are full of love. And if you are ever in Spartanburg, come visit us at Fernwood because that is what we are. We are a church for everyone. We
So
have women deacons.
I
So,
would do you remember Cameron from band?
yeah, he did. He lives up here.
He's a pastor up there. If I were in Spartanburg, I would probably go to his church. And I get his newsletter, so I signed up
I
for
get
that.
that too. Yeah.
Yeah. We support you, Cameron, and your church too. But yeah, so it was wild. I don't think my law partner's watched it. I don't think she will. Her church, as she described, was culty, as she has said, and that these vibes kind of remind her of that. Put my phone where it was not supposed to ring. Okay, I think it went away. Sorry about that. But yeah, so. What was his other charge? He had cyber stalking, and what was the second one? Do you
I
remember?
can't
He has two
remember.
pending charges.
Let me see.
And he was
Let me
arrested last year. They are still pending. And they did execute props to, speaking of HIPAA violations and ethical violations, a biblical counselor, therapist. HIPAA does not apply to them. I did not know that. Did you?
I never really knew that. I guess I didn't know what a biblical therapist was. Like, I don't know. I guess I would never think if I went to the preacher, HIPAA would apply if I went to them and said I was, but I would think there'd be different laws that would apply. Like, I
Yeah.
don't know. I guess I never thought about it, but he was charged with cyber stalking and making false statements.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. But he was, so they did execute a search warrant on his house. And just so y'all know, this is how the biblical thing. So Michael was seeing a biblical therapist. And when she left JP, she didn't know how she was going to afford it. And by this point, the counselor lady really cared for Micah and her well-being and said, just don't worry about it. I've got you. That. So then once the FBI got involved after Micah's death and started looking at him for all this other stuff. They needed a way to search his house, and he was not leaving his house. So she called him and was like, "Hey, did you still want all these documents and stuff from my time with Micah?" And he said, "Yeah, I absolutely," because he was trying. That's why he called Regina Ward. He kept trying to get all these documentation, and he was going to destroy it, I'm sure. But he wanted to get everything that said things bad about him out, like he wanted it so the family wouldn't get it and expose him. And so he's like, yeah, so that's how they got him out of the house to execute the search warrant. So they do have a lot of his computers, electronic devices, and I don't know if that was before he was charged or after he was charged, but I'm sure they are going through everything with a fine-tooth comb.
I will ask you this. It really bothered me. Did you notice in one place he had on a Gamecock shirt?
No, I'm glad I didn't see that.
Yeah,
Now I can't
so
watch it.
my law clerk who was here this past summer, Seth, he went to Clemson, and so he's a huge Clemson fan. And he's the one that actually texted me to watch the documentary because he went to high school with some of these people. And I said, I watched it. And I was like, let me tell you, that man had on a Gamecock shirt and it made me sick.
Why? That
Maybe
hurts.
he, yeah, but he was from Florence, so that's probably why. But let us know what other documentaries you want us to talk about, if anything big's going on, or if you want us to dive deeper into some of these cases. We are
Yeah,
here to do that for you.
absolutely. So let us know your thoughts on Micah. I don't think this is the last we're going to be hearing about her story in this case. I think there's going to be more to come with the FBI investigation. So stay tuned and we'll see you next week.